Good morning.
Hello.
Hi, Richard.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning. Will we?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good afternoon.
So we had our shares of technical problems this morning. I'm kind of wondering about 10 minutes ago whether we were going to make this call work or not, but I guess it came together at the last moment, so that's good. Anyway, I'm really glad to be here again and share with you this work. So how has it been going? Why don't you raise your hand if you want to talk about anything today? Successes, problems, discoveries, you name it, just so... hit a 1 if you'd like to talk to me. Hit a 2 if you're having some technical issues and you need to talk to Devin. So let's see what's going on. And this is your time to kind of work with the material and see if you got stuck and how we can unfold and work with things here. Okay, we've got hands up.
Okay, I'm actually experiencing technical difficulties, so... let's see. Okay, here we go. Patricia.
I just wanted to say I did the process and my experience was, for me, it's much more difficult to get to pain than to get to the anger, because the pain relief was not so much a problem. So maybe for me it was easy then when I met someone who has a lot of pain, and I did the whole Ho'oponopono for this person, and then only I came to my own pain. So maybe if someone has also problems to experience their own pain, it could help to, if you meet someone, you do this for the other person, suddenly it comes also to your pain.
Well, one of the interesting things about this is that when you have some kind
of... I can almost hear you. It's very low.
I'll try talking a little louder.
Ah, now it's better.
Okay.
Yeah, great. Thanks.
One of the things that happens is that we tend to create situations to remind us of the issues we need to deal with. So somebody may make you angry, somebody may say something, somebody may do something. But if we have a difficult time accessing the hurt, and I think that's what you're talking about, the hurt in the emotional situation, you just have to be patient and open yourself up to it, because if it's important for you to process, some type of thing in your reality will help you get there, will help you show that.
Yeah. Thanks, yeah. I got just a little bit of it when I met this person who has this pain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that was like, as you said, it's some reality helped me a little bit.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Very good. And so as you started processing, are you feeling more, any symptoms shifting?
Well, I have the strong will to stop smoking.
Oh, okay. And you found some emotional causes that...
I found emotional causes, yeah.
Excellent.
Because the emotional causes was that I was not being looked after and not treated fair and not really stand behind me. And so I'm not looking really after myself and standing behind myself, I found out.
Right. Well, that's great. And now you can continue working with that.
Yeah.
Okay, let's hear from Michael.
Hi. I did the process, actually only step 1, discovery, with a friend of mine, and she did it with me. And she came up with 6 emotions. Which was fear, hopelessness, guilt, anger with myself, and weak and vulnerable, less competent. And we had a 100% match, but now I'm not completely sure how to go on from here. Like, is that all? The next releasing, is that all? Anger that has to be released, isn't that a mixture of anger?
It's a mixture. It's always a mixture of whatever is real to you. But first off, let's go back for a second. how great is it that you got 100% match?
Yeah, that was just incredible.
Yeah.
I didn't believe it. Really, I thought
isn't it amazing? I was working with a friend who, I mean, these things are so interesting how they happened. A friend of mine had a condition where when she imagined what it was going on, she said it's like there's this tree and there's this wire around the tree and it can't grow. And that was exactly how she felt about a relationship, was she was being held back from growing in a relationship. But that was the feeling of having a rib out of place, was as if there was this wire that was keeping, you know, the tree from growing. But it just paints a perfect picture. So, okay, you succeeded in step one. You got it. And that's, you know, you can't go on with the process until you've done step one. All right.
Yeah.
From there, then you have to go through the release process, and you release whatever is there, because there's a lot of emotion in that situation.
Yeah.
So what you need to be doing is being willing to feel it as fully as necessary so as to release what's there, whether it's hurt, anger, whatever. You go in and you get those emotions out of your system, and then you can move forward with the rest of the process. But congratulations, that's great.
So Richard, do you deal with each of the different emotions separately?
Exactly. You do them one at a time.
Okay. And so what about anger with yourself?
Save the anger for yourself to last. In other words, because if trying to digest that anger for yourself is a pill that's too big to swallow. Because if you have anger toward the people who hurt you originally and you try to digest all that yourself, you can never swallow that much. It's too big. But when you strip off all the anger that's toward the other people who have given you that message or hurt you in that way, then you have to be angry at yourself with an equal portion of compassion. Yes, I know why I did this thing, and I know I messed up, but you know, I also, you know, I'm angry at myself, but I also feel a lot of love for myself too, because I understand what happened there.
But from what I got from her is the anger is actually, well, it's anger from herself, but it's actually a situation, and the situation was that she came out of high school, went to university relatively early, with 17 or something, and or university, I mean, and then suddenly from a very protected environment in high school. At university, she almost fell apart. You know, her marks went down and everything, and so she was angry with herself. So it was more a situation than a person that, you know, did something to her. At least that's
that's an interesting situation. Yeah, she messed up.
Mm-hmm.
But consider this. Sometimes you have to look at the invisible side of things. The invisible side of things is maybe she had been angry that there were so many restrictions on her growing up that she had to be perfect all the time, and so she rebelled against it by messing up.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you a story that happened to me. I had back pain a few years ago, and I did not, you know, the traditional meaning of back pain, if you know, paint by numbers version, is am I feeling emotional or financial support problems, right? These are just the quick off-the-cuff answer you could throw out. And I wasn't feeling unsupported emotionally, and I wasn't feeling unsupported financially. So where was it? So Jennifer of Quantum Touch helped me find the emotional cause, and what it was I was angry that I was having to support someone who should be able to support himself. Somebody wasn't able to take care of himself, and I was having to take care of him. He was perfectly capable of supporting himself, but I was having to do it, and I was resenting it. I was angry about supporting someone else. So sometimes it's not the obvious. Sometimes it's the hidden thing. And so what I suspect for her is that, why did she do all that stuff? Aha, there was a reaction against something else.
Mm-hmm.
Because things don't happen in a vacuum.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much, Richard.
You're very welcome. Devin, you there?
Yeah, sorry. Are we moving on?
Yeah, we're moving on.
Sorry, I had to fiddle with my phone for a second. Okay, Doreen.
Oh, welcome. Thank you. I followed the process after our second session because it became clear in the first session that I had work to do on myself. And I followed it to the letter. And the only thing I added to it was I have a meditation, a recording that I use. There's several options. One's creativity, one's for to focus on, you know, something. So I thought I'll go up back for the focus one, and I put that on as I was going through the process, and the floodgates just opened for a good half hour plus.
Wow.
I followed it exactly as you said. I guess my thoughts were, I'd done everything else. All my physical things had been sorted out, hip replacements and everything. It was time to move forward. And I've been working on myself for 20 years. I'm sure many of us have.
Sure.
At different times in workshops. And somehow or other, I felt there was still some work to be done. And I wanted to make the most of it. So I gave it an extra boost. And I spent the whole morning basically focusing and following it to the letter, Richard. So.
Mm-hmm.
It worked for me. I felt as if I'd released that final angst that had been sitting there emotionally and tracked it back from the age of three and was able to, a bit like joining up the dots, because
yeah.
of this, you made that decision and that decision led to this decision and situation, et cetera, et cetera. So I allowed it all to come up in its own time, in its own way, and I felt, you know, for the first time, I guess, in my life, knowing I've had this issue, emotional pain, if you like, angst, it's gone. I'm not saying that everything's gone because it's a process and then maybe something might rear its head at some
sure.
point. I've done the groundwork and I feel as if I've let everything go as much as I possibly can. It's the wow factor. And I have a particular question for you.
Certainly.
A girlfriend, and I was just quickly trying to explain to her what I'd done, and she said something I think other people might feel too, and you can give us your sort of professional version of it. Why did you feel the need to go through that when it wasn't your fault in the beginning? And I tried to explain to her, you know, that it isn't about essentially laying blame, it's about clarity. So I'd like to put that question to you because I think other people would feel the same. Well, why are you beating yourself up over this? Because you know what, it wasn't your fault. And you think, well, I know that, but there's a reason we're going through this. So I wondered if you could answer that question because I think there'll be other people saying, I'm not going through that because it wasn't my fault in the beginning and I've done enough. It's
yeah,
tough.
Well, we totally have every right in the world to blame the people who hurt us for the rest of our life. We have the right to
yes.
do that. They did hurt us.
Yes.
But do you really want to carry that around?
Yes, that's right.
Do you really want to walk with that kind of pain? Do you really want to live that kind of, you know, extraordinarily difficult life of struggle?
Yes.
Or would you rather, you know, reconnect to your soul and your love and your spiritual connection again
that's
and experience
right.
that kind
that's
of bliss?
Exactly. So those people who say, well, you know what, I've cried enough over all this stuff and I don't see why.
All right, let me give you another answer.
You're not ready to move on anyway, obviously.
Well,
that's part of it.
Here's another answer to it, is that
yes.
when you've been hurt, you continue, and you haven't really seen the energy and the emotion of it, you continue doing that to yourself.
That's right.
You continue hurting yourself the way they hurt you if you haven't processed and released it. So how's that for an answer? So
So
you don't keep hurting yourself. That's the answer.
That's exactly, you keep doing the same thing to yourself. I did explain. Obviously the person I was speaking with was not ready to do this kind of homework, and that's
right.
perfectly all right. Everything
exactly.
in its own time. But I just wondered. I wondered if there were any other answers I couldn't think of that were, not that I was forcing it, but trying to help her understand. And obviously she's not ready to take it. And that's fine. I still love her anyway, and it's her journey. So if we went in the time.
When she's ready, and she's ready to stop,
yes.
you know, being in so much pain,
oh,
then,
right.
you know, then maybe she can consider it.
That's exactly
but
right.
But a lot of people value their pain. And some people think
oh,
that pain makes them better than other people because I've suffered more than you.
Exactly. The other thing I did notice was there was a moment in my process, and maybe others have experienced, where I was actually quite, I felt quite a lot of angst because I was having to give it up. Do you know what I mean? There was that momentary moment of clarity where I thought, this is a bit scary, you know, because you can't carry this around anymore. You're actually releasing it. So there was a moment where that insight came to me, and I'm sure others, where it was a bit scary about, well, you know what, you've hidden this since you were 3 and you're now 62.
Yeah.
You have to give it up at this moment in time or this through this process this morning. How does that feel? Well, you thought, oh, wait a minute. And then I moved through that and beyond. But I would, you know, for others, it might be it would be scary to, you know, but I mean, I moved through it, but it was one of those insights.
So how are you feeling now?
Oh, look, I've found, because I've wanted to write, I've got a degree in professional writing, and I've done everything else but actually sit my bum. I've done a lot of writing, but I haven't actually concentrated on it. And since I moved in on my own, and I've just made space for me, and I've got other things I'm doing, my writing flowed. I took a couple of short stories, and I just sat down, and my writing just came very easy. I was able to edit very quickly, and the words flowed into as I was making changes. So I was able to, you know, finalize, you know, 2 short stories and a piece of children's poetry that I wanted to send up. It was a goal of mine. And I did it in a matter of a few hours and,
wow.
and kept at it. It flowed. Although I've written before, I felt that it just flowed much easier. And other things I'm doing are actually flowing very easier. My whole life is flowing easier. And I'll just wait and see what other insights I get through this as time goes by. But it is the wild factor for me. I'm just quietly, it's thoroughly enjoying my life, and I feel that angst has finally gone, and I'm more at peace with myself, and there's a sense of happiness around all the big choices I'm making now. I mean, I knew I'd done everything else
up
to this point that I could work on and peel back every onion layer as we went through our life and all the workshops and things. But there was always that sense of knowing that there was some kind of emotional blockage, because all the physical stuff being fixed, you know, I look after myself and I'm done with all of that. So I knew there was nothing really else externally I needed to do. It was just the internal. And I've done that, and thanks to you. And it is the wow factor for me. I've just quietly started to really enjoy my life. And I just got rid of that stuff. And I had no idea that everything I've ever done related right back to that one particular scenario when I was 3. And that, you know, I hadn't, it's like you don't join up the dots. You've got, you know, certain parts that you're working on. And I knew this situation, but I hadn't realized that from that point onwards, I'd created my other ego, my alter ego, in order to feel loved and be loved and fit in with everybody and be this good girl, and all the things that you do all stemmed from that particular
wow.
moment in time.
Well, and how amazing. That's fantastic. And now you have a sense of freedom that you didn't have before.
I feel total freedom. I thought I did have the essence of freedom because I'd worked on myself for 20 years at different times, but there was still there's always work to do. But this time
exactly.
I felt got to the core of the issue as to why that situation then, you know, created, or I created all these other situations thereafter. So, you know, owning up and getting it up and getting it out is the best thing ever. So thank you very much, Richard.
And thank you for being an inspiration to everybody on the call. Appreciate it.
Guys, I tell you, it's the best thing you'll ever do, honestly. And follow it to the letter. That's the word of my advice. Go through the process exactly as Richard's written it. And it will somehow work, even if you've got to do it more than once. You know, sometimes it's where everybody says we have blockages or situations, but go through the process and follow it to the letter, and you'll at least have made the best attempt ever to move and shift whatever emotional pain you have. Yeah, go for it.
Thank
Good
you
luck.
So much. Thank you.
Okay, we have Kemi.
Hi, it's actually Bill, my husband.
Okay.
Hi. I guess my comment is sort of a follow-up to what she just said, and I had three quick points.
Good.
First was that it's very important to do it in an order.
Yes.
The second is that it's, for me at least, it was very important to get back to it as quickly as possible.
Yeah, you need to do it when you have the momentum.
Right. And the third was that, I'm losing my thought. I'm losing my train. Oh, yeah. And the third is that if you get stuck, to ask for help.
Mm-hmm.
Because
good.
For me, it's like I did them out, sort of out of order. I skipped from fully finishing the release to the insight.
Yeah, that's,
because the insight was so overwhelming.
Right, it is.
And so then when I went back to the release to finish that, I realized I couldn't do it. I couldn't forgive them.
Yeah,
and
that's a big point, yeah.
And so for me, it was a matter of afterwards just meditating and asking the universe, okay, it's like you said, it's too big a pill to swallow. I can't do this. You're going to have to do something because I give up. I can't do this. And then when I tried it a third time, I realized, well, it's like I realized afterward because at the time when it happened, it was like very abrupt and very dramatic, a shift, and I didn't really know what happened. I just knew all of a sudden I could see them for who they were. Afterwards, I realized that what had happened is that whenever I recall these events, I saw them through the eyes of a child.
Mm.
It's why I was emoting as a child.
That's perfect.
But then when I, but this time it was like I time traveled.
Mm-hmm.
And I went back as me, as the adult.
Right.
And I saw them as adults.
Right.
And I thought, wow, they're really young. And it's like I could see, and I said, oh, you know, look at my mother. She was a victim too. She was just doing and acting out out of her own victimhood. It's like everything became so much clearer to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I could go through the rest of the process in order and finish it. So it was like, you know, do it in order, get back to it, because, it was a few days getting back to it because I got really sick. And I realized, oh, you know, it's like I stirred all this up. It just magnified everything. And that's why it's important to get back to it as soon as quickly.
But also that magnification helped you to see it more clearly, too.
That's true. Yes.
And so congratulations on having the courage and the fortitude to stay with that, because I know it isn't easy and it isn't fun. But how are you feeling now?
Well, yeah, I had one comment that I noticed that was dramatic, in that afterwards I was just, you know, walking down the aisle at work, and there was kind of a bounce in my step.
Oh.
And, you know, and I thought, it just dawned on me, I felt lighter. It's the only way I could describe it, is I felt lighter. And I thought, oh, something's gone.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what it is exactly, mm-hmm. but it's like, it's gone. And I felt lighter.
Yeah, you let go of some of the weight you were carrying around.
Exactly.
Literally, you know, I mean, we think of the weight as, you know, physical weight, but when you're bouncing you're feeling lighter, you're really not carrying that emotional weight.
Right.
Yeah, that's really fantastic. And you'll probably start noticing it in lots of other parts of your life, you know, just kind of infiltrating that extra sense of lightness and freedom that you have. Because
right.
when you're not carrying that pain, then there's space for other things to exist in the reality.
Thank you very much.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Can I add something real quickly?
Please.
I'm his wife, and when you were doing the first discovery process and you had started the process, I knew he had started it, and I was aware of what he was working on, but then a couple days went by, and I could see him feeling worse and worse, and
mm-hmm.
and being really exhausted and tired, and then and being really cranky, and
yeah.
you know, all of a sudden I thought, wait a second, you know, it's not that, it's because this all stirred up, and I think if you live with somebody and you're doing this, it's kind of good to be aware, because if you can't finish it, to kind of understand that what's happening is the process, and it's doing what it's supposed to do, but it really isn't, it's not anything else around you, it's you doing your thing. And, you know,
good
once
point.
We kind of figured out that's what it was, like, oh, I don't, you know, fine, that's good, go with it, and it's okay, but, you know, I was kind of getting worried, it's like, is he getting really sick, what's happening?
Right.
And then, you know, we kind of knew what it was. And on the plus thing, I can definitely say that lightness, there's so much more joy, and you can really let a lot more laughter and joy back in your life again, and it's really been cool. It's really great.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah, it's like quantum touch. You trust the process.
Yep. Cool.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Okay, let's hear from Dorian.
Hello, can you hear me?
Quite well.
All right, great. Well, I did, I was working on the process yesterday, and, you know, there were a couple of emotions. There was hurt and anger, and then I kind of was trying to think, well, is anger underneath? I got a little, I think the main thing was happening throughout, in a way, there was a theme of, it was challenging to really stay focused, and, I think I have one question, first of all. So if you're processing the emotions one at a time, then you go all the way through the entire process with each one?
I think I understand your question. Yes, you go through each one, sure.
Okay, I mean, you don't like, let's say if it was hurt and anger.
Pick one or the other and process it through to the end and then go to the other one.
Right. Okay. That's. And then what happened was when I was. So I ended up doing that. But I kind of. I started to go with anger, and then I really felt like, well, hurt was really the more. That was really what I was feeling. So
sure.
I went with the hurt.
Good.
And then, I went with that, and I did. You know what you had suggested with. Well, I guess I didn't process hurt all the way through initially, and then I resumed the next day. Going with anger, but then I actually decided to go back to the hurt. And but when I was working on it, the original kind of match that had come up from this original the first time that I really saw an earlier situation that, and I haven't really processed through that one yet. I mean, I have in different ways, but not directly through this process. So I see that, you know, there's a lot of layers to it, and, you know, just going back, but trying to, it seems like staying focused on one thing at a time is really the way to do it, obviously. And it can be challenging. I think sometimes even for me, when the, in the working on the anger and doing the meditation and trying to see whatever, sometimes I just, I don't know, maybe it's partly not really wanting to, you know, maybe the difficulty in focus has to do with not really, well, I think one of the issues for me is really not taking myself, you know, disempowering myself.
Let me jump in a little bit, because it's really interesting how you've communicated this, because the way you've communicated it was really jumping around from topic to topic to topic. And that suggests to me that when it's difficult to focus in on a particular thing, there's a process of avoidance going on.
Right, yeah.
So I don't, I'm starting to feel the anger, oh man, that anger is something, but oh, I think it's the hurt. No, wait, it's the anger. No, it's this, it's that, and jumping and jumping. And so what you want to do is you want to settle in and make
right.
a decision that I want to feel this all the way to the end. And dive in. It's only 20 minutes of hurt. Set the timer. We're not talking about 2 hours, you know, or 2 days. We're talking 20 minutes of solid. And don't get distract yourself, because I'm hearing a real strong tendency to jump around a lot, just in the way you communicated the story. And that
mm-hmm.
suggests a real tendency to not want to go into the heart of the matter and to avoid it. Not saying that you would avoid it or you will avoid it, but just a tendency to avoid it.
Yeah, I think it's because it's really a bigger thing, and there's a part of me that's trying to say, no, it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah,
and
that's called avoidance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And so, you know, the biggest human fear is of the intensity of our own emotion. And when you think about that, why would we have so much fear about the intensity of our emotion? It's because, as I said on Saturday, a week ago, that because our hurt and our anger is deeper than we want to know. But underneath all that, we discover that our love is deeper than we can know. So we have to go through the painful stuff to get to the other side.
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah, I'm just, well, I'm feeling a strong emotion now. I'm just feeling like crying because I, you know, I feel like kind of that's the crux of this for me is feeling kind of laughed off, you know, having been, and then laughing myself off in a way or not.
Yeah, that's the avoidance. That's the avoidance,
right.
Is, oh, ha, ha, well, it wasn't that big a deal, and, you know, just make light of it. And I would imagine that might have been an MO that your parents used, kind of laughing things off and brushing them off. Oh, wasn't that big a deal. Brush yourself off. It was only a little flesh wound, you know, while you're bleeding on the carpet, you know.
Yeah, that is it. Yep. Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome. Sure.
Okay, Joanne.
Hello, Joanne.
Okay, we'll come back to her.
Okay.
Orion?
Hi there, yes. I just wanted to comment. I'm still working on the release part. I found that last week, I think I mentioned that I was able to really experience, sorry for the noise here, I've got a landlord blowing leaves outside. I was really able to experience a sense of pure love from those other people that I had, you know, in creating an alternate reality for myself. And it's really changed, you know, I've worked for decades on self-love, and
mm-hmm.
I can feel it in a way I've never been able to feel it before. What I wanted to comment on as well, though, is that at the end, I felt so incomplete, and I've had this
mm-hmm.
before in working in therapeutic circles, you know, the whole beating up on pillows and so on,
yeah,
and
right,
I just felt
yeah,
like
right.
there was no end to it. And
exactly. Exactly.
And I felt the same way this time.
Really?
And I did find a way to work around it. I'll be curious to hear
yeah.
what you would
yeah.
have done. But I did something called TAT to kind of release it, and then I was able to start to feel that anger without it being endless. And I was also able to see more clearly, okay, well, actually, some of this is not related to this issue. I can put it aside and focus on the actual issue. And then I feel like, and then interestingly, I wasn't able to feel any anger towards my mom, and I was like, okay, well, there's some kind of a thing going on between me and my mom energetically there, I thought, and in the end, I just realized, no, I want to feel this anger so I can be done, you know. But I wonder what, you know, how you would have approached it when they're just appears to me absolutely no bottom, because I went through the process of feeling that anger for such a long time, and I just, you know, and
okay.
this is what happened before.
Okay, let me give you some ideas, and maybe this will help, I'm not sure.
Okay.
One is that when anger refuses to be released, in other words, you feel
yeah.
it, you feel it, you feel it, you feel it, and it just never seems to go away, and you beat the pillows, and it just never changes.
Yeah.
What happens in those cases is there's a word for that. It's called self-righteous anger, because
oh.
it's anger that you end up having an ego identification with. They really did do me wrong, and I'm not going to let it go. I'm just going to feel it forever. I'm just going to, and so it really requires a conscious effort sometimes to spend the emotion like you're spending money, to release it fully and not hold on to it. It's a decision that I want to feel it so completely this time that I'm going to spend it. It's
yeah.
coming from very deep reserves within yourself to make that kind of decision. And certainly if the TAT or EFT or whatever method you're using can help you to access it more deeply, great, more power to you, because, you know, I came up with a framework of a system. It's, you know, Lord knows all systems can evolve and get better with time. But this framework works well, and, you know, it's just a matter of learning how best to use it for yourself.
Yeah. I had, like, it's like I said, I spent hours feeling the anger and going through that exercise, and it just at the end I was completely, well, I was certainly spent, the anger wasn't.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that if you intend on spending the anger, you figure if you spent more than an hour on it, you're really just spinning it at that point.
Okay.
If you spent more than 30 or 40 minutes, you're probably just really reveling in that anger, and it becomes an identity. It becomes something that we say, okay, this is who I am. I'm an angry person, and it gives me a false sense of power that I was really wronged. And I did that for years on certain issues and certain people. I carried that kind of self-righteous anger around for a long time, that they really did do me wrong. And this is like such a grievous, you know, wound that I could be angry forever. And you can, but it doesn't help. And so then it comes to this place where a very deep decision has to be made. It's that, okay, this time I want to spend it. It's not about how intense, it's not about how loud I am or intensely I feel it. It's about the intent of spending it. And then at some point, you'll never, you see, you could always bring up the anger and feel it for the rest of your life. You have every right to do so. And you can do that. But at some point, you say, all right, I've done a good enough job of feeling it and expressing it so that I know what it is and I know I've expressed it, but now let me look for my insight about how I've been hurting myself by carrying this around.
Yeah. And I think it may also be, like, I've been diagnosed in the past with OCD, and one of the biggest symptoms of that is self-doubt, and there may be an aspect of, you know, I don't know if I've really actually done this, you know.
Yeah, I think you're doing it a little to excess, is my guess.
Yeah.
Because to feel it that much and not be sure you've released it, you know, you're not releasing it at that point. Because what happens is you're just spinning it. Mm. And so what you need to do is you need to just have the decision. Talk to your higher self and say, look, I want to feel this for 30 minutes, and I want to feel like I'm done at the end of the 30 minutes. And even if I'm not fully done, because I know I could always stir it up again, I could stir up that pot and get it all activated again. You know, I could blow more air on that fire and get the fire to roar up again. Even though I know I could always do that, I'm going to assume that I have experienced and expressed this emotion to the maximum degree is necessary at this moment, so as to release it and to be done with it. And the way I'm going to know that I'm done with it is by being willing and taking the chance to let it go right now and move on to the insight of how I've been hurting myself by holding on to this.
That was the red flag. I didn't feel like I could go on to the insight, you know?
Yeah, well, take a chance. Take a chance. Sometimes in the forgiveness, you have to take a chance. You know, it's like for the inside, you take a chance and say, okay, I know I could feel this forever, but I want to take a look and see how I've been hurting myself by holding on to it forever. And maybe that'll give me the rest of the inspiration to let it go completely. And then with the forgiveness, you know, I remember one woman was saying, I can't do this. I can't say I forgive you, you know, just hang in there, keep saying, I'm sorry, please forgive me, I love you, and she did it. And then all of a sudden, it's like, wow, I can say that now. You know, she can say the words a few times and it doesn't really hit, but all of a sudden she said the words and it fit. It's like, yes, I am forgiving you now. So just kind of sometimes you have to prod yourself to the next step. That's what I would suggest, is just prod yourself gently to the next step. Try it out for 3 or 4 or 5 minutes and see how it feels. And then all of a sudden you're there, and then you're ready to move forward. But good work. You know, you're really doing it diligently, and you should come out the other side really well.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Yeah. Okay. So,
okay. Let's see. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I thought we were out of calls for the moment, but we have.
Oh, no, one. Yeah, we have a few. Let me see if I can get Joanne back. Joanne, are you there? Oh, bummer. Okay. Still not there, so Judy.
Good morning.
Morning.
How are you guys today?
Doing pretty well. How about
good.
You?
Good.
I'm doing well, thank you. I just wanted to make one comment about Orion's and your discussion,
please.
Richard. I've done also TAT, EFT, list.
Yeah.
The one that resonated the most with me until this now, I'm very excited about this work, was the Sedona method. And one portion of the Sedona method that may or may not be helpful to Orion and others is the part where you're asked to welcome the feeling of whatever that emotion is conjuring up in you. And for me, I find that to be rather powerful because the idea of welcoming, as counterintuitive as that sounds,
mm-hmm.
but welcoming the feeling tends to dissolve any resistance that might come up.
Yeah.
And I think the resistance can be the thing that will allow this sort of need to hang on to the anger in an inordinate amount of time. So I don't know if that's helpful or not, but it
certainly can be, and it's a really good step, and it should probably be included in the notes when you're starting to access all the intense emotions about welcoming them in. I like that.
Yeah. Great. Thank you.
You're welcome, and thank you. Appreciate it.
Welcome.
Yes.
Okay, let's hear from Terry. Terry, there?
Good morning.
Yes.
Yes. When I was doing step two, the release, first of all, I started to go into the anger. And then I found that the hurt came in at that time.
Sure.
And there was huge overlap.
Yeah.
So I went through all of those steps within that step and created the new past. And that was really lovely. It was so joyful and just lovely. So then when I felt I was finished with that and I went into the next step, processing hurt, it was like there was nothing left. There was no hurt possible.
You know, that anger meditation with the new past sometimes dissolves the hurt.
Okay.
And so you may have already done it. So nothing missed out, because if your reality is whispering to you and showing you what you left out, then you obviously left something out. But if you're feeling like you're on the other side, you are.
Okay, good. Because it almost felt like if I went into hurt at that point in time, I was betraying this new past. You know, it was like,
perfect.
No, I've dealt with that now. This, I just want to linger in this new past. You
and
know,
what I would recommend is give energy to the new past on a regular basis.
Okay, I'll do that.
Yeah, feed it. Feed that new past. And let that, and just really delight and live in that new past, you know, 3, 4, 5 minutes at a time, from time to time, you know, every few days or whatever. Just go back and say, oh, isn't that lovely? And just kind of give energy to that wonderful new past that you have. And let that be true. You know, it's really fascinating about memory. But the people who study memory realize we don't actually remember anything from our past. We're actually recreating it in our brain. And we don't always recreate it the same way. We tend to change the past all the time. And truly, the past isn't what it used to be. But the
makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, we keep changing the past based on what we think. And they did experiments where they'd have somebody run into the classroom and steal something from the teacher and run out of the room again, like a crime was committed, a surprise. Somebody just runs in the room, steals something, and runs out. And then the teacher says, who is that curly-haired guy who came in here? And then they did tests to see what people remembered about the person, and almost everybody remembered him having curly hair, but he didn't, you know, because they just implanted memory. I knew some twin daughters, and one had a very successful life where she and her husband built and sold restaurants, and they had horses and a big estate and a big house they were building, and the other daughter was a single unmarried mom who was doing jobs under the table, and the unmarried one, single mom, was saying, Mom always told us we'd never amount to anything, and the other daughter said, oh, no, she never said that. And it's like they had two completely different realities and completely different sets of memory.
Right. I fully identify with that because my sister did this with me last week, and we have different memories.
Yes.
From the same events.
And so now that you've got a new memory, it's just as valid as any of the others.
Of course.
Good for you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, that's lovely.
Okay. Go ahead, Margaret.
Hi. I'm actually had my question answered, but I wanted to elaborate a little bit more on it. Because when I was going through the process, I was thinking, you know, am I doing it correctly? Because I'm not really emoting or, you know, feeling it as intensely as some other people might feel it. But then you mentioned it's not necessarily the intensity, but the intent. And so when I went through the process, what I did was really focused on how the anger feeling felt in my body.
Good.
And I felt like by embodying it more and feeling how it felt in my body, when I was done, it released it from my body a lot more. And so the intensity was totally, you know, gone. And, you know, because I feel like sometimes it can become a too much of a cerebral process as opposed to a whole body mind process that, you know, it's hard to know when you're doing it right or wrong or whatever, if everything's going the way it should. But anyway, I was glad to hear that you said it's not necessarily the intensity. And one of the things that I've been doing that to kind of carry it on is every morning and every evening when I go to bed, I do the I love you, I love you.
Ooh, nice.
And it's been really helpful. Yeah, so thank you.
Well, that's actually a really good addition for people who have gone through the forgiveness process. I haven't ever thought about that, but it's excellent.
Yeah. Well, it's been very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Doreen?
I guess I just wanted to go over that point that I think it was Orion was saying about, you know, the tears would go on forever and he didn't think it would ever stop and et cetera. And I thought that I remember when I was talking about my situation that there was a moment in time in the process where I was aware of being scared of giving it up because you don't know who you're going to be when you come out the other side. In other words, you're right in the middle of it. And you'd also held on to it for such a long time. What are you going to do now? So there's that scary moment I felt, and maybe others felt the same, and I think Orion's maybe, you know, it's the same idea. If I give this up, I don't know what I'm going to do because I've had it for so long, and I'm scared of who I will become on the other side because having something within us for long, 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 long time, as we all know, is the root cause of our problem. Giving it up means giving up your ego and giving everything up that has created this. So it would be very scary. And my thoughts were okay, now you know this, you're going to have to take that leap of faith and know that you're doing the right thing, you know, and you're doing it all for the right reasons and actually make a conscious decision to let that fear go because it is fear.
Yes, very well. Very well stated.
And that's it. So, you know, if it's going on and on and on, it's, as I said, the drawn-out situation is about, I don't want to give it up because I don't know who I'm going to be when I come out the other side. You always become a better person, that's for sure, but you have to take that leap of faith and make that conscious decision to move beyond that. I know I had that particular point came to me as well. So and I took that leap of faith. So I'm not going back there. I'm on my way now. I'll just keep going.
Thank you.
And
I appreciate that.
That's the process, because it works. And so there is a leap of faith and a conscious decision that you can't keep doing what you've done in the past, and you have to let it go. So it was just to, you know, I guess, reiterate that point that it can be very scary to, you know, let go of something you've been holding on to and you think has been working for you all those years. Pretty much giving up your ego, I think, and becoming your true self. Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Okay, let's hear from Zuhair.
Hi, Richard.
Hi.
Okay, just wanted to touch base with regards to a couple of things, please, needed your input on.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed when I worked through one of my emotions, what happened very soon after was that I did feel that 30-odd% improvement in my condition straight away.
Nice, yeah.
But then what happened during the evening was memories from going back the 15, 16 years that I dug up. What was interesting was I started the memories of old songs that I used to listen to at that time all flooded in.
Okay.
So it was literally that everything had been shifted, and then suddenly that memory back to 10, 15 years ago all started to come in. And that lasted a few days with me, that I listened to literally every song that I used to listen to back then. And then slowly it left my system again. And then came a feeling of emptiness,
right,
and then feeling down and slightly unstable,
okay,
until I found my feet. And then after that, I felt as if the old symptoms started to return again a little bit.
Okay, so what did you do in terms of the process? How far through the process did
you? I went through the whole. I'd gone through the whole process right towards the end.
And so
I went through right till.
Okay, how did you feel through the forgiveness and the self-love? How'd that
through
work
the
for
forgiveness,
you?
The initial part of the forgiveness was very difficult. The Ho'oponopono.
Good.
Where I started off was I couldn't look at myself in the mirror.
Good. Good.
To
that's,
the point where
sign.
I was happy to look at myself in the mirror.
Excellent.
And then when it came down to the number seven self-love,
yeah,
that was more of my time to spiritually connect with God.
All right. Good. So.
And I saw it through. Right. Yeah.
Okay, so here's what I would suggest, is that if you start feeling not so good again, this is a new act of courage, but pull out the list again and see how the symptoms may be different than they were the first time.
Okay.
You might be finding aspects of the same theme that hadn't gotten processed the first time.
True.
And so this is where humility comes in, to be willing to see things for the first time again. And so, we made progress. You got to a level of self-love that you hadn't experienced before.
Yeah.
That's powerful.
Mm-hmm.
That's wonderful. But now we're experiencing symptoms again. Now, are the symptoms
right,
as bad as they were originally?
No.
Okay, so they're not as bad. So you're getting a whisper from the reality saying, hey, you still have to pay attention to this. You did great work, but now you got to go back and say, all right, what emotions am I feeling now, and how is this different, and what is this, you know, and just go through the questions again as if you were doing it for the first time.
Right.
And see, is there something slightly different this time, because there's probably a new message in there that you can get, and then you do the process again and again if necessary until it doesn't need to come back.
Could there be an overlap with other issues that have taken place since then?
Possibly, sure. And what you'll often find is, say that there's a trauma deep in the past that's just too painful to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
So then you find out that there have been 50 other things that were reminding you of it. There's a lot of other incidents where that same theme comes up.
Yeah.
And sometimes people who have trouble remembering a piece of the past will find, well, I can't remember what happened when I was 3, but I have no trouble remembering what you did to me 6 months ago. Okay?
Yeah.
And there's overlapping emotional impact on what happened 6 months ago and what happened 5 years ago and 30 years ago.
Yeah.
So keep working on those, and then you'll continue making more progress.
Okay, and just as a side, well, another question was with regards to a friend that I worked on. He had to deal with some trauma from a parent that has passed away.
Yeah.
And he says, well, I've forgiven my father now, but yet the symptoms persist. And
well,
and after he went through the whole process,
has he forgiven himself? Yes, that's the issue.
I walked him through all the steps, and he felt much better within it.
Yeah.
And again, with him, the symptoms started to return after about 4 days.
Okay, well, then look again. There's some other pieces.
Yeah, back in, yeah.
Yeah, because we see this thing working. Now we just have to find out what did we leave out. Because these things are very deep. I mean, this takes you right to the core of your soul.
Of course.
And so it's not like, okay, I did my processing one time and I'm done. This is a lifelong job of getting clear, getting healed. Yeah, and so...
That's right.
But as long as you keep feeling better along the way, we know we're going in the right direction.
Of course. Thank you very much.
Well, most welcome, sure.
Thank you.
Okay, let's try Joanne one more time. Are
Hi,
you there, Joanne?
Good evening. Can you hear me?
Okay.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi. Do you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes?
Yeah.
Hi. Yes. I just wanted to say I can really testify to that. It's a lifelong job because we seem to really create the conditions and circumstances to release our emotional hurts of the past, because since 2005, even before I learned Quantum Touch, I started the emotional releasing emotional process. And every time that I found I worked with people and they had similar problems, I used to have a wad of tissues at the bottom. I used to work with the feet and cry along with them all the time. But it seemed like it's really a lifetime job because you're releasing layer after layer after layer. And I came to a place where I felt sort of quite peaceful and fine with myself. And then when this self-created health workshop came up, I realized that, you know, I really have to do some more work on myself. And you're always working on other people opposed to working on yourself and really dig into it. And when I went into the past, I now saw the little inner child and being fearful and curled up in a bundle and all that. And she was shivering. She was so fearful. She couldn't breathe. She felt that she was choked up. And then I went in as my adult self and comforted her, and, you know. But still, I feel, you know, I went through the whole forgiveness thing and I went through all that. And I don't have a problem with that. But the symptoms, I feel lighter, but the symptoms of the personality drip, it still persists. So that really seems to be a tough one.
Yeah.
So I just really probably have to go back in there and keep doing it until I get relief.
Yeah, basically so. Just go back and experience it fully.
I found I had a lot of relief from a right shoulder injury, you know, like a repetitive strain where I hurt it like 8 years ago, where I lugged heavy luggage to London to my daughter when she gave birth to her first baby. But then I traced it back to that incident where her husband wasn't appreciative and was lugging all these things. And I realized that I had a lot of anger against him being so unappreciative. And so when I released that, and I really felt that because whenever I used to pick up heavy things and I used to re-injure it and used to come back and then get better, and then I pick up heavy things and it comes back all the time. And so now I feel really there's a great measure of relief there since I've released the anger against him and so on. So definitely I think that I felt that I've made good progress. It's just like you say, it's work of a lifetime really. I don't know if you're ever done. I hope that one day...
Well, I think what happens is, you know, you get to a place where you're just not really attracting symptoms that way. And so this is like, you know, the early stages, but you also bring up a really good point that there's the logical reason that you picked up something heavy, and then there's the real reason that you didn't feel appreciated.
That's it, yeah.
And so
that is very valuable. Thank you very much. I'm actually grateful for this process because I'm doing it for many, many people, and including the recreation of the past and everything, working with the inner child and
yes.
comfort and all that. But I've never yet thought of sitting down and going into myself and doing the process for myself. So that's really valuable. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're so welcome. And thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, how are we doing here?
We're good. Let's hear from John. Sorry, John?
Yes, ma'am.
Go ahead.
Can you hear me, Richard?
I certainly can.
Oh, okay. I don't know if the others hit this point, but basically I've been stuck all week. And I thought, well, you know, I'm thinking, now let me finish, okay? But just listening to the first three or four callers, when the word avoidance came up and you said it's like you're jumping around from one problem to the other. And
right.
I started writing notes as fast as they were popping up into my head. And I came up with, like, you know, key phrases that my parents used to say to me. And I thought, well, that's one thing to look for. And then I remembered a period where probably a lot of the other folks on this call have come up, where there was a period where you were really accident prone. I wrote that down, which I had totally forgotten about. And the other thing I just want to say is you're scaring the living hell out of me. Emphasis on the words living hell, but it's a good thing.
Okay. Yeah, and why is that?
That it's a good thing you're scaring the living hell, because it's the weight that I've been carrying around with
all
me.
Right.
And it pops up every time I take a quantum touch class.
Okay.
It pops up and I start crying in the middle of class, and I always wonder what in the world's going on. And it's just within the last few minutes, what I wrote down is, it's like, now I know which door to open to go through this. I'm not stuck anymore.
Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah, this is it. You're doing it. You're doing the work. So just keep at it and keep working your way out of that. I like the comment we heard earlier from the gentleman who said that he had more bounce in his step. It's that kind of thing that you just keep feeling freer and freer.
Well, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, appreciate it.
Okay, Allison.
Hi. So I went through the steps up to step five. So I went through the anger and the shame and the martyrdom and those emotions that came up with my mother.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to the insight, you know, I'm doing the same things that my mother did.
Right.
And that's okay, because that's how I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
I went through the step four and the remorse that, you know, this is how I treat myself. I did step five, but through all of this, I didn't, although I was really feeling the emotions and I was pounding a pillow and
at least
I thought I was feeling the emotions, nothing really shifted. I didn't feel much in step five. My symptoms haven't really shifted.
Okay. So did you get, so you're talking about the remorse to the forgiveness, right?
Yes.
So where did you get stuck?
Well, as I was going through the process, I didn't really think that I was stuck. It wasn't until afterward when I realized that.
Okay, so what happens when that occurs is you didn't go deeply enough.
Okay.
Yeah, because if it's a little too shallow, you don't get the relief. And you gotta try to take it deeper. Because a gentleman a while ago was talking about how he couldn't even look at himself in the mirror. It was that painful. painful to see himself for what he had done. The remorse was so profound. Now, to what level of intensity did you feel the remorse?
Not nearly as much as I felt the anger and the frustration.
Okay, now you got it. See?
Okay.
We tracked it down. We found the leak in the... We found the leak, okay? Why the boat didn't float. Because what you want to do is you want to feel that remorse so profoundly. It's like you get close or even past the point of unforgivability. You go, oh my God, how could I forgive myself? I can't even look at myself. I'm so upset with what I've done to myself. And so to avoid the intensity of the emotion, you just kind of shallowed out the process a little bit. Now, you can always go back and deepen it, but you didn't get there. You didn't go deep enough, that's all.
All right. So have you found that symptoms for people who go through this might actually get worse because they haven't gone deeply enough?
It's possible because your higher self is saying, come on, get with the program. Do the process. I think that that our higher self and our body conspire to help us to grow. And one of the ways they do that is by reminding us through our body and symptoms of what we're actually experiencing. And, well, I'm not want to be angry, but you are angry, you know?
Yes. And,
like, I know somebody who, he was very upset about a relationship recently, and he ended up breaking his hand. Well,
wow.
You know, that's a lot of violence. You know, when you fall off a bicycle and you break your hand, that's a violent act. And he was feeling emotionally in that much pain. But he took it out on his body instead of taking it out through the honest expression and the grief and the emotions that were appropriate in that situation. So if we don't let ourselves feel the intensity of the process, then we're just walking through the steps, and it's not really going to work very effectively or at all. And sometimes if you are just walking it through, the symptoms could actually get louder. Say, no, you're not dealing with it. So let's get there, because I think I might have mentioned to you this old adage that says if you learn to listen to the whispers of your reality, you don't have to hear the screams.
Yeah.
And so... if the symptoms are getting worse, the screams are getting louder.
And my whole life has been based on dealing with my emotions intellectually. Yes, I acknowledge them.
So there we are.
But I don't feel them.
Yeah. So that is exactly what you described. That's the process that you described. Is I went through the process, I did all the steps, but I don't feel better. Yeah, because you did it intellectually. And you did dive in. That's exactly what we were hunting for. Because I think that even beyond everything that I'm teaching, what I think people may be able to take away from this workshop is how we think through a process, how we're using intellect and emotion simultaneously, and how we're using the whispers of the reality simultaneously. So we're using all of our intellect and all of our emotional abilities, all of our intuitive abilities to be able to understand how we create life. And then from there, we can, you know, move things forward and really have a synergistic answer, not just a simple one.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, that's all for the hands up.
Okay, so this kind of brings up, not that last call particularly, but I was thinking about this earlier, that I want to take a few minutes and talk about the issues of negative ego, because we all deal with it, and we all function in there, and it's just one of the pieces of the puzzle that I think it's good to look at. But the positive function of ego is to see the world as an observer without judgment. So healthy ego sees a brick is coming toward me, I should duck. Healthy ego says, wine was spilled at the party, let's get a towel and clean it up. The negative ego wants to do interpretation of the event. They were jealous that I'm holding such a good party and they spilled the wine on purpose. They're out to get me. They create all these interpretations. The ego really is, tricks us up all the time, the negative aspect of ego, but it really only plays in a few arenas. It plays the self-pity and the self-importance. And the self-pity is, we talked about this, the overt self-pity or the martyr self-pity, which we talked about. And then the self-importance is the part that wants to feel better than other people. And interestingly, I did an exercise years ago where I had a whole room full of people write down their secret better than. In other words, somebody says, I feel better than, you know, why do you secretly feel better than other people? And they wrote them down on pieces of paper, folded them up, and threw them into a wastebasket. I went around collecting them from everyone in the room. And then, and I had them definitely not put your name on the paper, okay? And I read the papers. And I read them out loud. And then we laughed at everybody for these better than statements. Well, this person is the most loving person in the room. Well, how loving is it to feel that everybody else is less loving than you? And this person is the most generous person. Well, how generous is it to think no one else is as generous as you? And this is the smartest person. Well, how smart is it to think everybody else is dumber than you? And so on. And what we realized was that when you give something to that negative ego, you lose that quality for yourself. And so busting ourselves on our negative ego, on these judgments that we have about being the best or the worst, or the combination of self-pity and self-importance simultaneously. Poor me, I'm the best at this, but I'm not appreciated, right? So holding both positions simultaneously. And just to really be clear and honest about what's going on. Anyway, I just thought I'd throw that in there because it's one of the topics I like to cover at some point, but it didn't really fit in, but I just thought I'd throw that in at some point. So is there anybody else who would like to chime in and continue the discussion? I think we have a hand up, don't we?
Yeah, we have Lizzie.
Lizzie.
Hi.
Hi.
I just want to comment on the aspect part. When I did the homework and did the process again, it was an aspect of my first homework.
Okay.
And it was less intense emotionally.
Right.
But it was still intense. And I just felt such a relief.
Mm-hmm.
It was huge. And another comment I want to make is the fear of the fear kind of thing.
Right.
Several years ago, I had some short and intense therapy, and it was brutal. So I'm less, probably less afraid of how the fear is going to feel because of that.
Right.
This is much more gentle, even though you still, you know, have to feel all this stuff. It's just that when you opened the door and you didn't die, you're to do. That's all I wanted to say.
Thank you for sharing that. That's really good. Yeah, just being willing to go through these doors. You know, like I said at the beginning, I congratulate everyone for their courage and willingness to go through this process. And I guess the takeaway on today is that I just want everybody to feel like you can own this process, that it's really yours, and that you can use it throughout your lifetime. And if you want to, you can even, you know, often help other people with it. And by the way, we're looking at the process of eventually setting up, and don't ask the office about this because we're not announcing this yet, but we're looking at the possibility of setting up self-created health coaches and, you know, certified coaches. So if you might be interested in doing that, just keep working on yourself for the time being. Don't call the office because we'll let you know if we're ready to do this. But keep records of the people that you've helped and how it's working and how their progress is going, you know, as you're getting your hours in and practicing. Okay? So.
Okay, we have Eileen.
Hi.
Hi.
I had a question. I wanted to know kind of how to go in about this with real phobias.
Okay. So let's. Do you have an example of something?
Oh, fear of the dark.
Fear of the dark. Okay.
Don't remember. I mean, and it's bad.
Okay. So bad. All right. So let's just take fear of the dark, and it could be about you or it could be about somebody else. But we'll just make up some answers right now. So, what emotions would you feel if you were in the dark? Something's going to jump out and get you kind of stuff?
Just extreme fear.
Extreme fear. And so if you were to play out the fear fantasy, what was going to happen?
It is about myself, and it's one that I've been working for over years trying to get a resolution for. What would happen?
Yeah.
The light will go on.
Well, what's the story that makes it scary? So the scary is, I'm scared, but there's something behind the scared, and that's what we'd explore.
Well, it's something that happened to me when I was a kid, and the earliest remember
something did happen in the dark.
Mm-hmm. And I can't remember what it was.
All right.
All I know is at that time is when I became afraid of the dark.
Right. So what I would suggest is do a full exploration of it as if we were going through the questions and, you know, and see what you can come up with. And also see what is triggered in your life about that too, because as we do the exploration, you know, more and more stuff gets revealed. So
I had some ideas, and I had some of the questions.
What did you come up with?
What do I come up with?
Yeah.
It's paralyzing.
Okay.
It's just extremely paralyzing fear.
Okay. So it's paralyzing.
And not being believed, having to put up with it anyway.
All right. So not being believed. And what did you come up with on the dream image? The fantasy.
I don't really have one.
Well, get creative with it. Let something come through. You know, like, oh my God, is there a monster or is there?
Oh yeah, probably yes.
So
monster.
Yeah.
It's when
so
I became
talk
a creative monster.
So what you'd want to do is you'd want to paint the monster. You want to get a good picture of the monster. You want to get a clearer picture of the monster.
Okay.
And by getting that clearer picture of the monster, we're probably going to get closer to what exactly is paralyzing. So is there anything in life where you feel like you're paralyzed? Any situation in life where you feel other than the dark?
Actually, no.
Okay. Well, you know, sometimes
I know that fear holds me back.
So
from
what?
I'm doing other things that I don't want to talk about.
Oh,
in
that's
a public
interesting.
Forum.
All right. So that's interesting that there's things. I'm not saying you should talk about it in a public forum, but
yes.
It might be that what does it keep you from doing? Question is the one, right? Because those things that it keeps you from doing. In some way, are you paralyzed about those things?
I'm not sure, actually.
Well, actually, that's
I don't
an
think
interesting
so because I'm trying to go forward with them.
Yeah, but something's
it's
stopping
just
you.
It's an instinctive feeling that it's related to the dark.
This is really challenging. Okay.
I don't want to be afraid of the dark.
Okay. Well, I think that...
I don't want to be afraid of the so-called monsters either.
Yeah. So if you were to create a cartoon image of the monster, what would you come up with?
Okay, I probably don't want to talk about that in a public forum either.
Okay, so here's what you can do.
Something really freaky, let's just put it that way.
Okay, so So something really freaky. So mm-hmm. here's the thing, is that you're trying to do some things in the world, and you're feeling like this fear is holding you back, in a sense, paralyzing.
Mm-hmm.
And your monster is kind of freaky.
Yes.
And maybe there's something a little, you know, you're trying to fit in and be normal and not freaky.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
So
you got
I just feel like we're kind of edging toward the middle of this thing, but there's something there where you want to keep it safe.
You're right.
Yeah, and you want to play it safe. And now, who taught you to be so safe? Who taught you to have to be safe and not freaky?
That's a process I've learned.
Yeah, from whom? Well, let me make it simple for you. Was mom or dad telling you to be careful?
Well, I've kind of learned that by a process on my own.
Okay, but just for my sense of completion, did mom or dad, were either of them very cautious or very uncautious?
They just were unbelieving.
Unbelieving. Isn't it interesting? That's one of the things you said about fear of the dark, is nobody would believe you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so they're unbelieving, and that you felt that you're unbelieved.
Okay.
So
yeah.
I think there's a resonance with mom and dad here somehow, and trying to be normal when you're actually a lot more freaky than you know, which is wonderful.
Okay.
I mean, here you are on this call in this strange workshop. I mean, that's pretty strange.
You're right.
So,
I don't want to be freaky.
Yeah, and so you've been trying really hard not to be, you know, strange.
You're correct.
Yeah, and so where did that control come from? Where is that tightness, that holding yourself back, come from? And I feel like, you know, if we trace it back, we're seeing that there's this resonance to the fear of the dark in trying to keep that control. And I suspect mom or dad were either control freaks or they were out of control.
Okay.
Does that ring true at all?
No, you're probably right. I mean, they forced
okay.
the issue of turning the light off and being terrified. Even more.
Okay, yeah. So they were punishing you then with a light.
Oh, no, by making me stay in it when I didn't want to.
Yeah, that's called punishment. They were
okay.
punishing you by making you be in a situation you were scared of.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I understand that.
I think that's where I'd go.
Okay.
I go into the thing of being punished.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, what I, you know, as a case in point for the group, I just say, take a look at how we kind of worked our way through, you know, how we kind of dived into the nebulousness of dark and then found out that you were being punished. And you can't release the emotion of the dark because it's tied into being punished and not being believed. And the monster was their cruelty.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay, I'll work with that.
Okay, good. Thank you so much
Absolutely.
For sharing.
Thank you for your help.
Okay, good. Yeah.
Okay, let's hear from Ava.
Powerful.
Did you say Ava?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, that's me. Hi.
Hi.
Just a question. I worked really a whole lot with the system all week long, every day. And I think I've gotten to a good place with it. But like the caller before her, I did not really feel that I'm fixing the problem that I was working on.
Yeah.
I mean, I did the work. I found a release. I did all the steps. But somehow it didn't, on the end, seem to have anything to do with what I started to work on to begin with. So how would we know when we did it right? I had
well,
to work along.
Okay, there are different ways of knowing. One way is how you feel emotionally. Because if you feel a whole lot better emotionally than when you started, you did some really good work. Another way is that the physical symptoms have shifted in your favor, so they're not as bad as they had been. And that is another way of knowing. If you worked all week and you don't really feel better on some level, then the work didn't have depth, or you're working on the wrong issue or something. You know, it wasn't as honest or profound as it needed to be.
Well, should we, in all circumstances, expect a change in the symptoms?
Not always, but usually. Usually you get a change in symptoms from doing this. But
well, I worked on something really major, so
okay.
I don't know.
Well, okay, but here's the thing. How do you feel emotionally now about that situation?
Well, the health situation, I worked on a health problem.
I know, but how do you
the
feel about the emotional?
Didn't
okay.
get better.
All right, that's not what
but
I asked.
But I understand a lot more how I created it.
Okay, that's good. But how do you feel emotionally about the emotional situation that was behind the health condition? Because that's what I was asking you about.
Oh, I don't know. I thought I did while I was working. I even felt something physical, like I was thinking, how could I describe it? It's like acid rain, but instead of coming down, like leaving my body. It was a very
okay.
funny sensation.
Okay.
And I did feel all kinds of emotions. I felt, you know, the regret that really I did this to myself.
Yeah,
and,
right.
But
how did the forgiveness feel? How'd that go?
You know, I don't think I did too well on that one.
Okay, I think you didn't get through the process.
Like I kept saying it that
that doesn't matter.
I'm sorry, but I don't think I felt sorry.
Yeah, well, see, if you don't
feel that I really caused it.
Okay, so here's the deal. You got through some of the release, but you didn't really tap in. The insight may not have been deep enough, and the remorse clearly was not there, so the forgiveness was empty. And then the resolution of the problems didn't happen. So we tracked it back. So you may have done some good discovery work to find emotional cause. You
yes,
may have done some
I
good...
I did that, yes. That was
okay.
really surprising, yeah.
Yeah, that's surprising stuff. Okay, so you're on track with that one. And the release work, did you feel that you felt some very deep
yes,
emotional...
I did.
Okay, good.
Hours. Yes.
Excellent. Okay. Then, did you have a realization that by holding on to this all those years, you'd really been hurting yourself?
I had the insight, yes.
Yeah, you had the insight. And did you let yourself feel profound remorse of how deeply you've hurt yourself?
I sort of went through the motions. I don't think I
Yeah, okay. So you just got stuck on step four. That's okay.
Would it be helpful if I work with someone else in that
It
case
may be.
My...
Yeah, I think that could really be helpful to work with somebody else. Yeah, definitely. That could be helpful. But it's so important to understand that if you don't finish the seven steps, you end up with a mediocre or no result.
Well, I sort of did it, but I don't.
Yeah, sort of.
I don't think
doing
the
it.
Emotion was in it. You know.
Yeah, there's. You know, it's kind of like pulling the bow back 2 inches and expecting the arrow to go a long way. It doesn't go anywhere. If there's no remorse, consider the remorse is how far you pull the bow back on a bow and arrow. And if you only have 2 inches of remorse, the arrow is going to go about 2 inches forward, and it's just not going to fly. If the remorse, like this fellow earlier said, you know, he couldn't look in the mirror. Okay, now we're cooking. Now you've got tremendous energy to move into the forgiveness. You can go through the motions of anything. This is why when I first looked at Ho'oponopono, I was so frustrated because they just have people sitting there repeating endlessly, I'm sorry, please forgive me, I love you. You know, and it's like, well, what's that going to do? Because it doesn't have the power or the impact to it.
Okay.
It doesn't have any
vitality. I did it, but I didn't feel it that way.
Yeah, well, that's what you got to do. And so to make this process work, you got to go into the depth of your emotion.
Probably that's where it wasn't.
Yeah, that's what happened. So now you know.
But if and when you do, there is that it always changes your condition, your physical condition.
Well, so far, people have been telling me that it's improved their physical condition. I've actually remember reading a study years ago that an enormous percentage of people dying of cancer have an insight before they die about why they had the cancer. And then they die. So it did, their condition did change. They no longer had the pain. They no longer carried the crutches around. You know, death is the ultimate healer, but that we don't really want to heal that way all the time. That's, you know, but bottom line is to access the information deeply and then have the full release of it is what we're after. And you're getting close. You're getting really close. Now you got to be willing.
You're right that it doesn't work on your own, so I'll have to get somebody.
Yeah, get some help. And so it can work on its own. A lot of people do it on their own, but a lot of people like to get some assistance. And you may, I think, did we share the mailing list already, the email list?
Yes, I have the mailing
list. Okay, so you got a list, and so you can email a few people and ask for some help, or maybe somebody you've worked with already, and that would be great. Because you're close. You're really close now. So just take it the rest of the way and come through the other side. And then you can let us know how much the symptoms changed.
Well, that would be wonderful. Because I'm working on losing my eyesight, which I have done almost completely by now.
Oh, no. Okay, well,
it very hard even to read my own notes, you know.
Right.
Write something, but I can't read it back.
Okay, well, you've got the insight. You've done some of the release work. Now it's time to blast through the rest of it.
We'll keep with
Richard?
Yes?
I'd like to ask anybody who wants to assist Ava to raise their hand by pressing number 2. I think
good
that
idea.
Helps in connecting people a little bit easier.
Yeah,
I
think you're right. Why don't you do that?
Yeah, okay.
So raise your hand if you'd like to work with Ava.
Okay.
We got a bunch of them. There were 6 people there.
Okay. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, you got lots of help there.
Great. Great. We need it. We need every bit of it.
Okay. Excellent.
Okay. Let's hear from Joanne.
Hi, Richard and everybody. What I found with my clients, what has been helping a lot lately, is the fact that we actually resist our pain.
Yes.
And the minute that we actually don't resist it anymore and come to an acceptance first, and I say, I accept my pain, and you just keep on repeating that until you feel it in your being that you're accepting it and you're not resisting it any longer, and then you can actually progress to a point when you say, I love my pain. And if you keep saying that and keep saying it, then you start, you no longer deny it and you no longer resist it. You surrender to it. And the minute that you actually surrender, then that is the point where you can start releasing it. It's because we resist things so much that we cannot integrate it nor release it.
Wow, I like that. That's good. That's very good.
Cool. It's been working very, very well. I had somebody who came to me who broke his shoulder in a motorbike accident. And he's actually a surgeon, a doctor from Spain, and he moved to Cape Town where I live.
Mm-hmm. And he went to the acupuncture because he couldn't release the pain. He was on morphine. And then the acupuncture helped him in some measure, and then his wife took the online course, and then she persuaded him to come to me. He's been to see me for 3 sessions, and I worked on him. And I worked on him emotionally as well, with mm-hmm. accepting the pain. The minute that he, you know, she was sitting there and just telling him what to do, and he was doing it in Spanish and really, really doing it mm-hmm. and accepting the pain and surrendering to it, acknowledging it, and loving it. And then the ludicrous part at the end is when you say, I love it so much, please give me all the shoulder pain in the whole world. And then everyone starts laughing, and it sort of lightens up, and it changes the whole energy around. And then it becomes ridiculous, and then you actually shift the whole thing. And I found with him it's worked profoundly with his shoulder, and also with the other few clients as well. The minute that they said that they accept it and they love it and they really love it and accept it, then it starts shifting, it starts moving.
Beautiful.
And dissolving, really.
Well, I love that. That's a nice addition. And anybody wants to pick up and use that, that's great. That's really, really wonderful. I like having systems that are evolving rather than, you know, believing that I have all the answers.
That's great if we can share what we know and what we find out.
It can definitely assist in the experience of the process and letting it be there.
Right. Thank you for your initiative.
Pardon me. Okay, if anybody else has a question or comment, I actually just put down the hand. So if you did have your hands raised, raise them again for me by pressing 1 if you have a question or comment. Okay, Lynn.
Yes. I've known for a long time because I've worked with Lazarus and Galexis that I am have a problem with martyr.
Yes.
And I continue to make the choice not to be a martyr, but do it anyway because I come from a long line of martyrs.
Right.
Generations and generations. Suggestions on how to make a choice to stick with it and make that choice stay. That's what I'm saying.
That's a really interesting question. Let me see if I can pull something out of my hat here. So the opposite of the martyr is the gratitude and the love.
Okay.
So what are you focusing on? Where is your focus? And the answer is going to be that you're going to need to start shifting your focus. So, all right, here's an idea. So let's just pull a number out of a hat and say, okay, I'm a martyr 20% of the time. And say, okay, so we want to, or maybe we'll put it 40%, or whatever the number is, it doesn't really matter, but we just start with a place. And say, okay, we're going to start shifting this. We're going to start moving it down. So if you were to meditate on what areas of who you love is a good place to begin, or what you love. It could be a cat, it could be a dog, it could be a nephew, it could be anybody. And just start pumping the love. Start really focusing the energy on what you're grateful for or where the love is. And every minute that you're doing that, you're not doing martyr. And so what you want to do is you want to start filling the space that you had filled before, and realizing, okay, this is an old habit of doing the self-pity vibration. So let's put something else in its place and see how much you can start filling the space with something other. Because you recognize it when it's going on. And how quickly can you recognize it when you start moving into that vibration?
Yeah, pretty quickly.
Yeah, pretty quickly. So, okay, I'm doing the vibration now. And what was the comment we just heard a moment ago about, you know, can you accept yourself? Can you, you know, love yourself? You know, even though I'm being a martyr right now, I I understand that's what I've done. And I, you know, and maybe, you know, I wonder if we might be able to even do a self-created health process on the people, on, well, yes, you can. You could do a self-created health process on your parents for being martyrs, where you get really angry at them for doing that, and then you feel the remorse for having hurt yourself this way.
Excellent.
Yeah, that would be my first choice. And then also you start focusing in on like shifting your vibration consciously. When you start going into it, you go, wait a second, I know this whole game. That's an old tired script, as Lazarus used to call it, with, you know, beat up pages and everything. And so, you know, the dog-eared pages and the stains, you know, coffee stains on it and everything. It's an old tired script. So do the self-created health on parents being martyrs and how angry you were at them for that. Then the remorse of how you've wasted your life by carrying on that vibration, how you've hurt yourself by doing that. Then the forgiveness should have a lot of juice behind it.
Excellent.
Yes, sir. There you go.
Richard?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Now, I just wanted to say I've had multiple insights during this class that I want to thank you for very much.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Well, you know, this workshop was inspired by the work of Lazarus. That's where it came from. The way it happened originally was I had a private reading with Lazarus back in I first had that experience with the flu, which was Lazarus had said that all health issues are functions of some variation of repressed anger. And that got me started thinking about it. And then I healed my flu. And then a few years later, I was having a private consultation, and I had a rash on the left side of my butt. And I was thinking a little while before the reading, what was I going to call my butt? Was I going to say my ass or my behind? I was just kind of thinking all the different words as I was planning on my consultation. I called it my behind. And I said, you know, I have this rash on my left behind. And Lazarus said, yes, that's because you were left behind. And I thought, could it be that simple? You know, and that got me thinking about all the questions. And then I developed the questions from there, because it was just that little metaphor, my left behind. And there it was. Then I developed all the questions and developed it. And then it took me another 25 years to figure out all the rest of the remaining steps in order that we need to do.
Thank you for sharing that. That is awesome.
Oh, I'm glad you enjoyed it. Sure. Okay, what else do we have? Devin, do we have anybody online?
We don't have anybody raising their hand right now. I guess I'll expand. I was going to ask you a question on what we just heard from, because I have a little bit of the martyrdom thing happening, and I'm trying to work with it to the point where it's so real when you feel like the victim that you go into that. So I thought maybe if I just take responsibility for absolutely everything, because I don't trust myself when I have a situation where I'm the victim, because I feel like because of the martyrdom, you don't know what's real and what's not. And so is that a safe thing? I don't know if I'm like swinging the pendulum to the other side so that I can come back to the middle and learn to trust myself again. But I don't want to be so responsible for everything that the people in my life take advantage of those boundaries or that thinking. I didn't know if you had any insight
that. I think you're saying a lot of things simultaneously, and it's going to be a little easier if we break it down into smaller chunks.
Okay.
Because the idea of trying to take responsibility for everything is a long-term goal, but it's not always practical at the moment. So in terms of the martyrhood, why don't we start with, you know, were your parents martyrs? Let's start there.
Yeah.
Okay. So why don't we just start there at releasing the anger, because the message the martyr gives you is your love wasn't good enough. Your love didn't matter. Your love wasn't valuable. And so you were harmed by their behavior. And when you do that and you realize, oh my God, I am really harming myself, and I'm giving the people around me the message that their love isn't valuable. And then you forgive yourself for that. It's a lot more leverage than trying to take responsibility for everything that happens in the world.
Okay.
And there's a lot going on out there that I have, you know, I have a hard time owning. But if I can own how I love myself and how I care for the people I care for, it's a good beginning place.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Sure. That was a good one. Wow. It's covered some good stuff here. I guess we have another hand up now.
Yeah. Let's hear from Jane.
Hi, Richard. Thank you for all this very, very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Let's see. So I think maybe I have to go back to discovery, because from just other work that I've done over the years, I mean, I do have... it's not difficult. I don't think it's difficult for me to forgive, and I don't even see what I need to forgive anybody for.
All right, that's a problem.
Maybe, I don't know.
Well, if we're going to do a process, you need to have some starting place.
Well, that's what I'm not sure where it is, because I do, I think, I mean, people tell me, and I feel that I do pretty much love everybody, and I don't find fault particularly with anyone.
So it sounds like you're a really nice person and you're a lot of fun to be with.
Yeah, however, there's still something left over.
Exactly. So what symptom what symptom are you wanting to shift in your life?
The symptom is the kind of insecurity and feeling as if there's something as if I'm not quite smart enough or fast enough, and an insecurity that relates
all right.
to that.
So let's start there for a moment. So who gave you that message?
I don't know. I mean, I live with my parents right now, and
I'm not talking about now. I'm talking about when you were a child. Who let you feel that you weren't good enough?
I'm not sure. It could have been my mother, but I can't remember it.
Okay. So let's just say it was mom for a moment.
Let's say that.
As a point of reference.
Yeah,
because
she has dementia now, so.
Oh, yeah, it's irrelevant.
I can't remember who she was.
Oh, okay. So, but you can remember being a child at some point.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I can remember good things that she did for me.
Okay.
For example, when I was 13 and I was totally miserable, she said, don't ever let anybody tell you that this is the best time of your life, because it isn't, and it will get better. And I remember that as being a beautiful gift that she gave me.
That is a beautiful gift. I wish somebody told me that. So if you think back in your past, who was there? That was giving you a message that you weren't good enough?
I don't know. I really don't. Because, I mean, my father is a wonderful person and very kind. And, I live with both of them right now. My dad's almost 100 and my mother's 92. And they seem like really nice people.
Well, they are. But still, you got a message. And I'm not saying it's your parents.
I definitely must have gotten a message. And I don't know where it came from. I think when I was maybe 10 years old, I made it. I was miserable. You know, it was the hormonal changes and all that. And I just decided that I was going to turn it all off. And I think I did. And I don't remember
why
I felt that or
yes,
who
you were
told
going,
me anything.
Yeah, you were going through some hormonal changes. And you felt miserable. Now, if we break that down and look at it, that the choice of how you felt miserable and how you felt not good enough did not come out of a vacuum.
Right.
There was something that helped you trigger that particular choice, you could have chosen any number of ways to go with it, but you chose that one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or maybe you didn't make an active conscious choice, but that was the choice that was made.
Right.
So were there siblings involved?
My brother, and I was the one who was, I was a bully to him.
Okay, so you were the bully. So did you make him feel like he wasn't good enough?
Yes, I did.
Oh, there we go. So that's a piece of it, because you harmed him.
Yeah, I did harm him.
Yeah. And so that resonance is harming you.
Hmm. Yeah, I never thought of that.
It's always the one that we don't think about. That
yeah,
is active.
I never would have thought of that. I mean, was the bully.
Yeah, and so you made him feel like he wasn't smart enough or fast enough or good enough or something.
Well, yeah. I mean, he ended up being, you know, like having ADD. I mean, I don't think they had names for it.
Then,
but I think that my parents favored me over him because I was the better girl.
Right.
And I always felt very bad for him.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
Yet I knew that when I was younger, I had been bullying him too. So,
right.
Although I've never really felt guilt over it, but I can remember
but
that.
But maybe you bully yourself. You know, because you're telling yourself, I'm not this enough and I'm not that enough.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure where you came up with the idea of being a bully. So in some regard, was there any bully energy in either of your parents? I know they're really nice people, but that doesn't mean it didn't happen.
Yeah, it's possible. If there was a bully, it would have been my mother.
Okay. So if you think about not the lovely woman today, but the one who didn't always have the wonderful advice for you at the moment you were in pain, but the one that was being a bully, how would she have bullied you back then?
I don't know.
Okay, well.
I mean, I was kind of... In school, I always had to work harder. I mean, I got good results, but I had to really, really work hard.
Yeah.
And I can't remember how she reacted to that, you know, whether or not she supported me staying up late doing my homework or she didn't. I don't remember.
Okay, because it's really hard to track this one. I'm having more trouble on this one than most, but usually we can find something pretty clear. But this time I'm feeling a little bit more blocked on this because... It was partly so long ago, and it's partly so hard to remember, and it's partly that it's more nebulous than some of the others.
It does feel nebulous because, you know, I've been sort of trying to figure this out for years, and I've never, although I've overcome a lot of other hurdles, this one I haven't been able to get to.
Yeah, I would just, you know, stay with the process and keep asking yourself questions and seeing what starts to open up here.
Yeah, and I want to explore the thing with my brother too, because I hadn't really taken that one much into account before.
Yeah,
and certainly.
And the forgiveness is also what we've done to other people, not just what other people have done to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I never thought that I hadn't forgiven myself for that, but
look at that. Okay, you bully yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's sort of what the call was about. And you bullied your brother. Did you bully anybody else in your life?
No, not that I remember.
Okay. All right. And are you sure that nobody bullied you? Besides mom, maybe.
Not that I remember.
Okay. Well, anyway, we got a piece to work from, and so you can try it and see if you can open up the door on these things.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and I did have one other question,
too.
Oh,
yeah, sure.
That was on the Ho'oponopono. There's usually four elements to that, and you only use three of the four.
Yeah,
and I was wondering if there was a reason that you could mention for that, why you left out the thank you part.
Because I felt like to say thank you would invalidate your emotions. Because look, if I'm saying I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you. What? What am I thanking you for? It just didn't make any sense at that stage of the process. And by the time I'm saying I love you,
having faith that it's actually that you're making the connection with the whatever you want to call it, that you're making a connection.
You could. It just seemed to soften the emotional experience, not intensify it. I want to intensify the emotions.
Yeah. Okay.
When I say I'm sorry, please forgive me, and I'm feeling unforgivable, if I start saying thank you, it's like what? It doesn't fit with my feeling of unforgivability at that moment, and I don't want to sort of discount the intensity that I'm feeling by trying to put a positive emotion or a positive spin on that. And by the time I'm already into I love you, 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 thank you seems like lame. Thank you is what happens when somebody passes me a napkin. You know, thank you isn't it like the biggest transformational experience of my life. You know, please pass the mashed potatoes. Thank you. It isn't like, oh my God, I've forgiven something I've never been able to forgive forever and ever. Okay, well, the thank you is implied, all right?
Okay, well, that's certainly a way to look at it.
Well, that's how I put it together, and that's what makes sense to me. Okay. So, but if you want to throw thank yous in, you're welcome.
Yeah, because it does make me feel the connection, that I am making the connection. And sort of getting into the appreciation.
Well,
of
good.
What's going on.
Well, you know, you're more than welcome to
put another way of looking at it. Yeah.
You're more than welcome to put the thank yous in.
Mm-hmm.
You're welcome.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard.
Sure.
This is wonderful.
Great. Glad you're enjoying it. All right.
Okay. Let's hear from Michael.
Hi, Richard. It's me again.
Good.
This time I want to ask you something. My friend worked with me, and the issue primarily was overweight, my overweight.
Okay.
And from there, I actually realized that it's not only the overweight. Overweight is just one expression of an addiction problem that I have. And that was smoking and sex and coffee and all different kinds. And I sort of overcame most of them, except for the addiction for food. So my question now is, should we stick to the addiction of food, which is relevant right now, or we went back to where addiction started, which was when I was about 14 in that range, and I'm 60 now,
mm-hmm.
And trying to remember what happened then. And then I went even further back when I was about 10. That was a time when my sister and I felt very abandoned from my parents.
Oh, I think that's where I go. Because that abandonment, because how did you comfort yourself from abandonment?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, mm-hmm. So let's go where you go where the juice is. Go where the energy is. And
okay.
the energy is what triggered you to when you felt so unfulfilled and you're trying to fill yourself up.
Okay.
Where was
I
that
never
trick?
Got that relation between that time and the later different kinds of addiction that I had. And
yeah.
The one that
so,
I have.
So when you dive into the addictions, the addictive behaviors, and you find out the emotions that are underneath those addictions, that's the juicy stuff. That's the really rich part that you're going for, that you're wanting to heal. Because what is the addiction trying to cover or give you that you can't get otherwise? See? And when you hit on the abandonment stuff, man, that's pay dirt. That's the real deal. Because, look, if I felt deeply abandoned, where am I going to get comfort? I could get it, you know, I could get it from food, I could get it from stimulants, I could get it from drugs, I could get it from sex, I could get it, you know. That's where we get the comfort, and that's how addictions get started. because we're in pain.
Even though the abandonment was like about 3-4 years before, at least I remember the addiction started.
It could be because, you know, yes, it could be, but there may be other incidents that continue to trigger it, or there may be other issues too. I don't know if that's exactly the right one, but it's going to be something big. In other words, there is something that you're trying to fill, something you're trying to nurture yourself with the food or the drugs or whatever, or the sex, that is not being given to you in your life. And so when you look at the parental stuff or the, you know, your life at that point, and you say, what was my pain that I was trying to hide from? That's what it is. It's right there. It's the big stuff. And then you realize, yes, I've hurt myself by having addictive behaviors. Yes, I've really hurt myself doing that. And then you go through the forgiveness, and then it's very powerful.
Okay. Because around the time when the addiction started, you know, I felt very overwhelmed in school, and I felt I can't keep up with things, and I felt ashamed, and I felt guilty towards my parents that I, you know, would not be able to meet their expectations.
Okay, and so how much pain is it to have people throwing expectation on you that was, you know, maybe not even reachable?
Yeah.
That's a lot of pain.
Okay, thank you very much, and thank you
You're
so much.
You're very welcome, sure. Yeah.
Workshop and that, of course, it was really, really, it revealed a lot. Yeah.
Great.
Thank you.
You're welcome, sure.
Okay, let's hear from Orion.
Hi, yes. Okay, I just wanted to get off speakerphone. I think it was Jane who was sort of feeling stuck around the point of how nice her parents were, and
yeah,
I have some experience around that. Years ago, I worked with a fabulous psychologist, and she talked about the various masks of shame, and one of them was that she called the nice family.
Yeah.
Others were rage, withdrawal, righteousness, or always knowing the right things to say or wear or be. And these were all different masks of shame, but the nice family was one of them. And this can involve a real unspoken pact and rule never to break ranks with this. And this could be where the bullying would be coming from, but you know, as an example of that, and there was some of that in my family. I remember when I was a teenager, and my grandmother was visiting us, and my younger sister really shot off at my grandmother, and I really bullied her. How dare you talk to your grandmother like that? And what was really interesting, looking back, is how my grandmother did sort of say, oh, well, Ryan, you don't really need to do that. But she didn't really intervene either. It was really interesting looking back. But, you know, it's really easy if I, you know, and tempting to, when anger or feeling really dark is coming up, to blame things like hormones and ADD and pathologize emotions.
Of course.
But, you know, it's like there's a sense that in those families, there's a sense that you are not good enough if you are not nice.
Wow.
And that is an underlying, profound bullying message.
It's really insightful of you to bring that up because, yes, there is an oppression of the nice.
Yeah. It's like, how dare you not be nice? You have fallen from grace. We're not even talking to you. Well, talk to the hand, you know.
Yeah.
And it's like it might not even be sad, but there would be like this passive-aggressive stuff going on, but still being very nice because you have to be.
Yeah, I remember my grandmother once, who is the nicest person, you know, I need to put that in quotes, she once got really angry at me for a very small thing, and all of a sudden her claws came out, literally. I mean, her fingernails were scratching me and cutting me.
Yeah. Wow.
Because I wasn't being as nice as she expected me to be suddenly, and it was this instant turnaround of this very nice person who wasn't nice because you wanted to be nice because you had to be nice.
In order to be okay.
To be okay. Otherwise, we're going to see the other side of this person.
Yeah.
Whereas the side that's being buried, yes.
Yeah. If it were okay to feel the anger,
yes,
then I wouldn't have to be nice to, you know, and then the niceness would come from a place of wanting to, not having to, like you said.
Yeah, it's a preference to be nice as opposed to an obsession or a need to be nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just thought I'd offer that out.
Well, I think it's really nice of you to share that.
I feel very holy.
Thank you. I appreciate it much.
Okay, let's hear from Jane.
Yes, thank you, Orion. That's a very good one, and I think that that's something I can look at because we did not express anger in our family. We didn't, and we just didn't do that. I think at one point my mother used to be angry, and my father taught her that it was not logical and it didn't really produce any good results to be angry. So
oh, boy.
Why do that, you know?
So you were all being bullied to be nice.
It was
an invisible bully.
So what good did it do to be angry? You know, it just stirs everything up. So yeah, this is a good one to look at. Thank you.
It's often the invisible ones that are the most challenging sometimes to get to, because it's what is the background noise was actually the problem, and it's sometimes just hard to see. You know, the blind spots are by definition invisible. And so if everybody's always nice, then what are we hiding from?
Mm.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. That was really good. So Ryan really came through on that one.
Okay, Joy.
Oh, hi.
Hey.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
I do.
Okay, I just wanted to address the thank you part.
Yes.
When I say thank you, it's because I'm getting something from someone else.
Right.
And I've learned to say I give thanks when it's from myself.
Okay.
So the giving thanks is from within, and that resonated with me because you said you left out the thank you part.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of takes me out of the emotion and puts it out there that I'm getting it from somewhere else.
Yes. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it takes me out of the emotions too. It's like, I'm sorry, please forgive me, and I'm just really in the depth of my own pain and agony, and I'm saying thank you. It seemed like it didn't fit for me. So that's why I didn't want to go there at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. We got a new joke. It's called thank you.
Okay, let's hear from Lynn.
It was another insight on the mother bullying, and Orion's answer was wonderful. But for me, when my mother tried to teach me something, it was, you have to wash that dish again, it's still dirty. You have to iron that blouse again, it's got a wrinkle over here.
Wow.
Over and over and over again, and that was my bullying, and maybe that is also something else that Jane could not have seen as bullying.
It's possible, yes. And that's a really good one, too. And that's something you're probably going to want to release those emotions around as well if you haven't done so.
Yeah, absolutely. See, I wrote it down. It's on my list.
Good for you. Yeah, it's so powerful because the things that were just given in the household sometimes just become background and it's hard to spot them as being separate. But they're really big.
Yeah.
Okay, let's hear from Joanne.
clarify there. Yes, I also found that mostly people have problems with their parenting issues. And with the parents, like the mother finds, mother always finds fault with whatever the child does. And if they try, and they give up trying, and they become helpless or they become martyrs because they feel nothing they ever do is good enough. So, yeah, that's also something to explore. Look at your relationship with your mom and your dad and see how they were viewing whether they were satisfied with your efforts. Because they often don't realize that little people can't really do things the way grown-ups do it.
Yeah.
And then to honor the child, to say the child was trying its best, its level best, and it's got to be good enough.
It
doesn't
have
to measure up to the parent.
Yes. It's so interesting how we get the most deep emotional, psychological imprinting and lessons and pain and everything else in the first 3 years, and that's the part we don't remember. It certainly creates the whole industry of psychotherapy that our biggest conditioning is something we can't even remember. But we do have clues. You know, this is also about past lives also, is that some people want to go in and find all the past lives, and that's a great thing to do if you can get there. But there's enough in this life to show us what we need to know. There's enough information being given through the relationships and the people of our life to process what's there.
Yeah, I was certainly one of those that blocked out my entire childhood because it was much too painful. And I found that my sister, that was a total nervous wreck, she could remember everything and I just blocked it out. It was too painful for me. And then I had to find out in a difficult way. Things came flooding in when it was related to other things, and it just the memory started flooding back, and it was painful, and I had to work through it every time it came in. So, yeah, sometimes not easy or straightforward either.
But how good is that, that you have a sister to help you fill in the blanks?
Yeah, that is really helpful.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Nobody else is raising their hand. Do we have any more questions?
Yeah, any comments?
Comments?
And yeah, or maybe some of the people who went all the way through would like to talk about what that was like as well. But this is what I love about the class is that we get to really keep wrestling with the material and learning what we can so that you own the process and it's really yours. Well, I don't think we have any hands up, do we?
We do not. I have a quick question.
Oh, wait,
we
do have a hand up. Yeah, why don't you give your question, and then we do have a hand up.
I just was going to ask you if you've had any experience with PTSD, what is it, post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD? have you heard of this working on PTSD?
I haven't talked to people who've worked with PTSD, but my friend Dawson Church, who works with EFT, did some research and found that about 6 EFT sessions just really helps the people with PTSD. And he did quite a number of research projects demonstrating that about 6 EFT sessions just does wonders for PTSD. And then he presented it to a psychotherapy association. I mean, this is published research that he did, and they didn't want to hear it. And they got really angry at him that non-trained people were able to help soldiers with PTSD. Anyway, it's kind of interesting how that happens.
Well, and I would assume that this works well. I mean, I haven't heard of anybody yet, but I would assume it works really well on that.
It probably does.
Yeah.
But it may be a challenge, too, because the intensity of the experience like some of the soldiers are having may not really fit in with their childhood and stuff. It may be more of a challenge to try to figure out. But these things always have resonance, so there is pieces of resonance and such.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I haven't had a chance to work with them yet, so I don't know. And I don't like to talk about – I don't like to make claims about things I don't know.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Okay, Kim, go ahead.
Hello, Richard and Devin.
Hi.
Thank you very much for what you're doing here, both last weekend and this weekend. last weekend on Saturday when we were doing the discovery process, I thought I was working on self-sabotage.
Mm-hmm.
But as we worked through some of the stuff, it actually came out to self-worth. And I found that it was very interesting just a few moments ago, Richard, whenever you shared, my heart is racing right now and I am a nervous wreck, but
sure.
Very interesting that you had recognized that in the first 3 years of your life, this is shaping and forming you who you are. And just recently, I have found out that there is a possibility that I have a half-sister that I never knew about.
Wow.
And that my father had had a relationship with a woman within months of my mother and him conceiving me. And I've been working on this for a little while, and I had found out about this other girl roughly 5 years ago, but up until about 3 weeks ago, as I'm working with my father doing quantum touch, et cetera, and him having a very difficult time, it was revealed that he would rather die than tell me the secret.
Wow.
And we would be very close in age,
mm-hmm.
and my mother and I, my father and my mother separated as when I was just, before I was actually even born. And my aunt and I had been talking recently, and I came to find out that the 9 months that my father did not see me as a baby, he was actually holding and feeding and nurturing this other child.
Wow.
So my self-worth... through revelation of this process that you have so kindly shared with everybody, I've come to realize an insight that this is where it's stemming from. And I'm still in the remorse, and I'm still in the all of that. I have progressed slowly through a couple of steps, but I find myself repeatedly coming back to the remorse.
So what do you mean by remorse?
Because I thought I was dealing with self-sabotage, and now I'm really dealing with self-worth.
Okay.
And I've got to get this. It's paralyzing me in so many ways, the self-worth that I am, like, I've earned a trip to Portugal. I've earned a trip to Hawaii. I have bailed on myself and not gone ahead and experienced those things because I didn't believe that I deserved it.
Okay.
But I worked my ass off to get it.
Right, right.
So I need to stop doing that so that I can fulfill everything that I am meant to do while I'm here.
So do you feel like Dad wasn't loving you good enough?
Yes. I think so. I think what I'm my thought is that why did he choose this other baby over myself?
Well, it probably wasn't.
You know what I'm saying with that 9 months.
Yeah, it was probably about his relationship with your mom. If you're taking an adult attitude about it,
and my logical side.
Exactly.
Has dealt with everything.
Right.
My real side, my emotional side, have tucked this baby away way too long.
Let's look at this. Self, in sort of a archetypal sense, love comes from mom and esteem comes from dad, from an archetypal sense. You know, mom gives you unconditional love. She loves you no matter what. But dad, you got to earn his love.
Exactly.
That's sort of the archetypal picture of these things.
And I have found myself trying to earn with my dad throughout my entire life, not feeling like I was good enough.
Yes, and so you got some real big anger there.
Mm-hmm.
You got some real big hurt there.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where you'd want to go on releasing that. Now, self-esteem, we talked about earlier, comes primarily from your own honesty, integrity, responsibility, and self-trust. That's love you earn from yourself.
Okay.
But as a child, you get your self-esteem from dad. And
mm-hmm.
if dad isn't giving it to you, then your whole feeling of self-worth is, you know, you're running on empty.
Exactly.
Then you're going to punish yourself for it, like not take the trips and such.
Exactly.
So you got your work ahead of you now to really release the anger.
Okay.
And then really, and then realize that you've harmed yourself by not having released that anger.
Oh, most definitely.
Yeah, and so you've got your work ahead of you, but at least you've got a map now.
Exactly.
And you have clarity.
Yes. And I just want to say thank you so much to everyone who's been brave enough to pick up that phone and say their story.
Yeah.
They have inspired me. I sat here last weekend feeling and wanting to share and tucking it back inside and thinking, okay, what could I possibly share that's going to make a difference for somebody else? And then today I'm like, okay, I have to do this because I need to get this self-worth thing figured out.
Yeah. And when you release those emotions, you will have done it honestly with integrity. You'll have taken responsibility and your trust will grow and you will be feeling internally based self-esteem just from doing the exercise.
Most definitely.
So you've got your work.
Thank you so much, Richard.
You're very welcome.
Blessings to you and your family.
Well, thank you.
Okay, Ruth?
Hi, I'm on a cell phone, so I hope it's okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. I just had a couple of observations. Because I'm a therapist, I've dealt with people with PTSD before.
Sure.
And I've found that the self-created health is really very helpful in a lot of ways. And there are a couple of different ways that I work with people with PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it is, you know, doing some relaxation visualization, so they're very, very relaxed, and then have them see what's happening while we keep them in a relaxed state. If they start to get tensed up, you back off a little bit and then have them relax and then move them forward a little bit until they're able to visualize what happened but with a different ending. How would they have it be different?
Okay.
So they're able to vanquish the opponent. And sometimes it's been helpful if I have them, let's say if it's a gentleman who's been through, let's say, a lot of fire back and forth with an enemy.
Yeah.
In the army, and so I'll say, okay, your big brother is there,
mm-hmm.
and that frightened child inside yourself who's curling up in a ball and just screaming and asking to be protected,
right.
Take his hand and lead him to safety and let him know that it's going to be okay. So I teach them the self-coping mechanisms.
Okay, so they can add some of their own resources into the situation.
So that's part of what I do with PTSD is, you know, you teach them the coping mechanism. So if it comes up, then you do that. But then I kick in the quantum touch part of it. Where are they feeling this panic? And then you have them lay their hands there and breathe and run energy into that area.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was thinking about the gal that called in and her parents had her be in the dark when she didn't want to be.
Right, right.
And I was feeling anger, you know, putting myself in her position, thinking, what
right.
would I be feeling if that were happening?
Right.
And I was feeling pretty angry and
yeah.
that they didn't protect her. You
exactly.
know?
And they her, intentionally, you know, encouraged her fear. They were playing on her fear, actually.
So there's a basic need of a child to have the parents protect it, and
exactly.
yet they didn't. No recognition,
right.
no validating, not
yeah.
hearing her at all.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a big one. That's a big one, for sure.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate the insights very much.
Good to talk to you.
Thank you. Likewise. Okay, how are we doing now? We got.
We're good. Does anybody else have any questions or comments or insights?
We'll have about maybe 20 minutes left or so. Oh, we have someone else. Looks like Orion again, maybe.
Orion.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah. I had another thought about the caller about being punished with the darkness, and I think, you know, it may not have been as sinister as we're going to, you know, reinforce your fear as much as they may have had of just a very, you know, may have looked at it as tough love, you know,
yeah, exactly.
Get toughen up, you know,
but
toughen up.
But the impact was the same. The
yes.
impact was mean.
Exactly. And that, I didn't mean to downplay the impact,
yes.
but
right.
as far as where they may have been coming from, you know,
right.
I think it can be very misguided. You know, tough love can be good sometimes, but yeah, that's all I wanted.
By the way, that it's really interesting to just think about tough love for a minute. And there is value in tough love, but I've known a lot of people who've been wounded by tough love. I mean,
yeah.
really damaged by tough love. And this is also an observation that a very wise man made, I heard years ago, comparing liberal and conservative philosophy. And it turns out that liberal philosophy is generally about nurturing love, and conservative philosophy is generally about tough love.
Yeah.
You know, you committed the crime, now you've got to pay for it. And the liberal says, no, rehabilitation. You know, and it goes on that way with all the political issues, that one is more of a tough love stance, and the other is more of a nurturing stance.
Well,
and they both have value.
Yeah, well, I wonder if tough love really has as much value, though, as it's cracked up to be most of the time, because isn't it enough to set your boundaries and take care of yourself and model that, you know?
Well, yeah, setting boundaries is tough love.
Maybe.
Well, yeah, say, look, you're crossing my boundaries now. I have to say no to you.
Yeah.
That's tough.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so having healthy boundaries is incredibly valuable. And it doesn't have to be mean or abusive, but
yeah.
it is tough. And say, no, you are crossing my boundaries. I can't do that. I have to say no.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep, thanks.
You're welcome, sure.
Do we have anybody else?
Okay, well, we don't think we have any hands up now. Still got maybe 15 minutes left on the call. If anybody else wants to chime in, this is a really good time to maybe come up with our closing thoughts or anything else. So,
okay, go ahead, Joanne.
Yeah.
Hi, I just found that sometimes when it's difficult to get into the emotion, just to keep repeating it, if you can't fully go into the anger or whatever it is, if you just say, I'm angry, and you just start saying what you're angry about, and then you really get deep down to the hurt and everything that comes up, then you get more of an insight by just repeating it, and then you internalize it, and it actually helps you to go deeper into the emotion.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah, it can definitely help.
Yeah, thank you. I'll find it out for myself.
Yeah. Good. So, anyone else want to talk about stuff?
Richard?
Yeah.
I can add a little bit of I don't know, insight, or this may just be a comment, but this is, I don't know, the third or fourth time I've done this call now. And I've picked a different subject every time. I think I realize now that I have to work on my relationship with my mother and get that anger out. But it's interesting because the first time I did it, I was rearing to go, and I couldn't wait because I knew it was on the other side.
And then the second time I noticed more resistance mm-hmm. because I knew that I would have to go into the emotion again. And sometimes you don't want to, you know, it's just that resistance, but I did it anyway. And it's been a huge benefit for me to do it every single time. So I guess the insight is that, you know, this may be the first round for a lot of you, and you might find that you have the inkling to do it again on another subject, and you may resist it. But my encouragement is that you don't resist it and that you go into it again, because it will just continue serving you and continue changing aspects of your life to move forward. And just if you could just have the courage each and every time, because it does, once you know, it does, there's a little, it's a little scary. So I just want to remind people that that will come up, but it's totally worth it to keep at it.
Yeah, it's a process. You know, I mean, I'm sharing insights and things that we've figured out over years and years, and just because you've got the map doesn't mean that you've explored all the territory, and there's always more to learn and to do. And the more you get into it, you know, the more powerful and the easier it gets over time. But then again, when the new issue comes up, you got to do it over again, and that challenges us. So, you know, this is yours now to take with you and to use.
Okay, Kemi, go ahead.
Actually, it's Bill.
Hi, Bill.
And I have what may sound like a kind of a confused comment. There's something I want to say, and I'm not sure I'm going to say it very well.
Okay.
I remember Castaneda's character, Don Juan, said something to the effect that the person, that the true seer needs to face the petty tyrants before they can truly see. That most people think it's the other way around, that you have to be able to, you have to learn to see first, and then you can face the petty tyrants.
Okay.
And what by that I think, you know, the petty tyrants is all the stuff that we've been talking about. You know, our parents, our boss, you know, society, that the things that we face and the cruelty.
Mm.
And that I think what he's saying is when you learn how to face these petty tyrants and to heal this, then you can see. Then you have, you know, then you can learn to see into the other worlds and to have all these experiences that we all yearn for.
Right, right.
But that all that's really blocked from you until you can, you know, so we think, oh, if I could only see into the other world, if I could only see auras, if I could only travel out of my body, then I could face life. Then I could be the better person. You know, but you have to, but it's like life says, no, you're here for a reason. You have to learn to face your petty tyrants, then you will be able to see, because then you'll be strong enough to see.
Beautiful. And then we take it another step further and realize that whatever they did to you, you've been doing to yourself. You became the petty tyrant.
Right.
And you've been tyrannizing yourself. You've been terrorizing yourself by doing to yourself what they did to you. And that is one of the great, that is the insight that always comes in the work. Oh my God, yes, they did that to me, now I'm doing it to me, and I have been doing it to me, and now I have to forgive that. That's like the mind-blowing part. And then when you get to the other side of that forgiveness, wow, the door's open.
Right.
That's really, you know, the core of it, isn't it?
Okay, Joanne?
Yeah, there's a saying that everyone in our lives are just holding up mirrors to us to show us how we are treating ourselves and how we're viewing ourselves. So we can break all the mirrors, and it will never ever solve the problem until we look within. So you find these conditions of your life keeps on bringing up the things that you must heal within, but the real problem lies within you, not outside of you, because the whole world outside is just reflecting how you are inside.
And
if you go into this whole field of oneness, that we are all individual threads of this whole tapestry of humanity, and there's oneness and connectivity or connectiveness between all of us, then you see, but you are really, like you say, you're hurting yourself, because that is the feeling inside of you that you're not worthy of love, that you're not good enough, or whatever. And that life keeps reinforcing those beliefs until we heal them, until we accept and heal that. All the lacks of our childhood, we must first heal before we can actually become stronger and really, really be happy and loving. But we first have to become loving towards ourselves and accept ourselves to know that we are good enough. And if you say, I'm this angry person, I'm this dysfunctional person, I don't fit in, but you rather affirm it and you acknowledge yourself that even if you are that, you're good enough, and you accept yourself at that, and then you can step out and start changing things instead of resisting everything.
And if that philosophy was widespread, we could never have a war.
That's right.
No one could even imagine creating an evil other and going to war. It would just be out of the question. It would be unthinkable. And if we really understood oneness, as you're describing it, and as we begin to understand it, we would not have, we would not feel alienated. The terrorist lies within. You know, we don't go looking for them.
Yeah, like with Quantum Touch Level 2, if we really, really can go deep into our heartfelt love, into our divine presence even, and becoming that, and pulling that light and the love and that beingness through us, then that's from that space that we become powerful co-creators in our life.
Absolutely. Now, guess this. When you do the self-created health, how good do you think the Level 2 Quantum Touch is going to be?
Much better.
Yeah, much better. That's exactly right. Because when you cleared out the debris, and then when you try to access the depth of who you really are, and that depth of love that you have access to, wow, that's what we're looking at. So in time, and I'm not there yet, we're looking at what are all the insights that link self-created health and Level 2 work together. And how do we work with both of them together? And I don't really have, you know, an agenda to teach at this time, and very few of you have probably taken both workshops anyway. But for those of you who have taken both workshops, think about it. You know, consider, how are we going to work with the knowledge of both of these at once so we can be even more responsible and do even better work?
Yeah, the interesting thing that I had with my very first Level 2 workshop, that there was a therapist that says, you know, when we are therapists and light workers, we're already working from a space of love.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said, but you don't understand. You have to go much deeper than that. It's not just whole superficial love. It's this deep, deep divine love, you know, becoming your divine presence and going very, very deeply into what you are and becoming more loving and more accepting, becoming the love that you seek. But it's like some people resist that, and it's like some people fear love. You know, they don't know what to do with that level of almost like a divine love. They can't seem to accept that because it's too deep. It's unconditional, but maybe most of us and all of us have only experienced conditional love. And now to get to real unconditional love, that's a challenge, isn't it?
Totally, totally. Well, well put. Thank you so much.
That's a pleasure. Thank you very much, everyone,
thank you
for sharing it. So wonderful. It's so insightful. I really, really appreciate it. And I'm so happy that I took this workshop. Thank you, Richard.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Yeah, well, really appreciate everyone, actually. This is great. Okay, we have anyone else on the call? Devin, how are we doing there?
We're good. We have about 5 minutes left. Nobody's raising their hand at the moment. That might change. Maybe.
So, Devin, do you have any wise imparting words for everyone?
no pressure. I think I said what I wanted to say. I think I did.
Yeah, I know you did.
And thank goodness we have a hand raised. Save Devin from
having to say something.
The pressure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Jyoti.
Hi, Richard.
Hi.
I would like to ask that down the lane, if you run into any questions or doubts regarding the process, Can we write to QT team, or can we contact, I mean, anyone to contact particularly?
You know, I don't really know. I mean, we're not really set up to do that. Okay. But I think we have a message board now for self-created health grads. And I don't know if it's being used very much, but it's certainly a forum place. Plus, you know, we have each other's email addresses now, too. And so I really think that everybody now has enough information that you can really run with this, and enough support and help that we can get assistance from each other. So I think that should pretty much cover our needs, because we have the map, and that's the most important thing. We've got the tools to be able to go from where we are to where we want to go.
Okay, thank you.
You're very welcome. Okay, anyone else want to chime in before we wrap it up? I think we covered. Isn't it amazing how the time was just enough? It was exactly the right amount of time. So it's about 4 minutes before we were supposed to end it, but anyway, maybe this is a good time for me to just kind of put some parting thoughts on it and just thank everybody so much for participating and having the courage. I know this is not an easy workshop. It's not like, well, level one quantum touch, you know, this is, you know, rub our hands together and breathe and, you know, hold someone else's shoulder. This is really deep, intense, powerful stuff that takes you right to your core. And there's a lot of courage involved in even being willing to do the process. And I know a lot of you, it puts you through a lot, but a lot of you have really come out the other side just with so much more gratitude and love. And I just want to thank everybody for honoring yourself and each other by doing this work. And I believe that this is work that will help, you know, not only heal us in our lives, but help heal the world in the real ways that it really does need healing, so that we can do what's necessary on the physical level to help things along. Devin, why don't you put everybody on speaker?
Okay. You're on.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks, everybody. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Richard.
Good luck, everybody.
Okay,
thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay,
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Namaste.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye.